Well, hi, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini. Welcome back. We are thrilled to have our next guest on the Go See Talk podcast experience, music promoter and presario world champion of booking talents, David McLean from the small part of Scotland known as Dundee. No, not Crocodile Dundee. Dundee, Scotland. David, thank you so much for being on the show. How's things in your world?
My world is on a scale of 10, 11 out of 10 at the moment, which is pretty rocking, right, you know? So, I mean, honestly, 11 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Superb.
Well, you know, it's so funny. People say, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
That's it.
The thing I love about music, almost on a daily basis, I find something new and interesting that doesn't feel like, you know, you watch a movie, you've seen a hero's journey. You know, you go to a restaurant, you've had the same tacos for, you know, 30 plus years. Yeah. But it always seems that like there's just something about music that just still, it finds ways to fascinate you. You feel the same way?
100%. I mean, I'm like ancient. I'm like probably as old as the dinosaurs. And I'm still going, but I mean, I hear music, like my daughter will recommend music to me, right? Bands I've never heard of, right? She'll say, oh, Dad, listen to the Banners. I say, who are the Banners? And I listen to it, I go, wow, that's a great tune, like, you know, or Blossoms or Five Seconds of Summer or something, you know, whatever. And they're tunes, they're pop tunes, and they make you happy. Then you listen to other songs that are sad that I know, like Kris Kristofferson or Leonard Cohen or Bob Dylan or whatever, and you get a bit sad, and then you can hear rave music and you start banging your fists up in the air and you're jumping about to the KLF or something like that, you know. So music is brilliant, and I still love it. You know, I can't play any instruments, zero. But, I mean, I went to see my band the other night, last night actually, in London, and I saw them in Berlin last week in Germany, Placebo, and I still love watching them. And it gets you different moods, but it's a great experience. Live music. Live music is my favourite, right? But recorded music's great because you stick your headphones on, you can get in the mood, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's great. Mm-hmm.
You know, here we are almost 2 years since the lockdown, the pandemic started, and people have just been chomping at the bit to get out and see live music. And whether it's studio performers recording for film or, you know, big 60,000 sellout concerts, like there's just a natural, like, oomph, we got to get out there. And I'm so glad that we're able to do that again. What's, what was your first concert after the pandemic?
I was Berlin last week with Placebo. I hadn't seen them play for 3 years. That was the first gig I'd seen in literally 3 years. And the gig before that was Milan with Placebo. And that was it, 3 years. But, and the shows we're doing just now were basically booked 3 years ago.
Wow.
Like, we're playing with My Chemical Romance at Milton Keynes Stadium, which is 100,000 people over three nights. And we're the special guests, right? And I've known about that gig for 3 years. And I love that band as well, My Chemical Romance. And I was wanting to shout it from the rooftops. We're playing with My Chemical Romance, right? And we've got an album coming out and it's going to be huge. But I couldn't do that. I had to keep it secret until last week. And I went, it's like, whoa. Yeah, and my daughter, she loves them. And she says, Dad, are you playing with My Chemical Romance? It's Placebo. I says, yeah. And then we were playing with The Killers. Well, we were headlining one night in Russia. It was Placebo, then The Killers, My Chemical Romance, then Gorillaz, and whatever. But all that got cancelled, obviously. And there's just so many things you miss out on. But it's all irrelevant at the end of the day because it's only money and good times. And everybody else is having a crap time. If you look at Ukraine and all these other countries, that it's just like shambles, like, you know. So, you know, I mean, we were lucky because we could still make money out of streaming and all that sort of stuff, you know. But my first live thing was Berlin a couple of nights ago, which was great.
Well, you know, you mentioned 3 years, and Schemers, the movie based on your life, was made in 2019. So that's also, what is it, 3 years of backlog to get this out? Can you tell us about the development and the exhibition?
So it was really annoying, like, you know, but because the movie came out, we won loads of awards, but 15 or 20 or something, like Russia, Mexico, America, France, Germany, and all that. And it came out in theatres in the UK, and it was number one new release box office, about 300 screens, which is a lot for us, like, because we're just an indie little label, like, you know. or indie company. And then it got retained in a couple of hundred. So it was making money at the box office. Then it was going to get released in theatres all over Europe and America. Then the pandemic came and everything shut down. So that was it. Everything gone. So that was it. 1 minute, you're kind of, it's all happening. The dream is coming true. The next minute, boom, forget it. So then you do your deals with Sky and Amazon and not Netflix, but various platforms, and it goes out on digital, whatever it is, you know, and that's it. So that was that. But, you know, it was that combined with the music going flat and then the film not getting to be in theatres, because you like to see your box office. And it was, the box office was brilliant in the UK. It was like, wow, we're actually going to make our money back in about 3 weeks. But then it shut down, you know, so that was that. But just, yeah, it's just life, eh? Doesn't matter. So what? So on. Yeah.
Well, it's funny how that struggle, both for the film and for the, you know, playing in live theater and events, it's like that parallels a lot of what was in the movie. And your life is just a series of, you know what, it's not working right now, but I'll make it work 5 minutes from now. It's about being nimble and resourceful. Yeah. And, you know, I was really amazed at the movie. So if you could maybe put, you know, 20% fiction, 80% real life, is there a percentage you could say that, you know, this is
McLean? It was 90% true. Okay. Maybe even 95%. Every story in it is either a spin-off of a story, you know what I mean, like a little spin-off of a story. For example, the thing about the painting, where the Jack Vittoriano painting, right, I didn't actually get that painting and hang it on my dad's wall, but I did get offered that painting and I knocked it back and took the 40 quid instead, you know. And it wasn't from a priest. It was a guy I worked with at Timex Watch Factory in Dundee, who was only £40. And he said, oh, my cousin Jack is an up-and-coming painter. He's awesome. Like, I went, and I said to him, well, is he famous yet? No, he's not famous. Will he be famous? I think so. Well, that's not good enough. give me the 40 quid. And then, of course, years later, if I'd kept that sketch, I probably would have got $500,000 for it, because he did an exhibition in New York a couple of years ago, 50 paintings or whatever, and it went for 100 million, boom, just like the whole thing, bang.
Wow.
So anyhow, Jack Vittoriano, the artist, had to okay using his painting and all that, and he loved the film as well, and I was really chuffed. And chuffed means kind of happy in Scotland, right? And I thought to myself, if I can ever make enough money, I'm going to buy an original. There you go. But that'll take a while.
Yeah, as most of those kind of paintings will take a while to acquire. But no, the reason I don't feel that ruins any mystique about the movie, because there's so many little facets of your life that I just found fascinating. You know, when I was first pitched this, I watched the trailer, as one does, and I go, I can't believe that this is an actual, like, your story. Oh, yeah. And this actually happened. So you got some big balls to be able to try to pull all this stuff off. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. Yeah. But the fact that, you know, there's no way to real fact check anything. You just sort of call somebody and it's, you know, there's no instant gratification like there is today. So how, how nebulous did you, I mean, was it scary? Was it, I mean, it sounded like you, amazing to go through what you did.
In the movie, it's kind of made lighthearted of the way it was, you know. I mean, there was other gigs we did with Thin Lizzy and a band called Exploited and things like that were absolutely mental, where things went definitely off the rails. But it's just like you didn't care at that age. You know, you're like 21, 22. What's the option? You get a boring, well, you kind of get a job, number one. There was 28% unemployment. So you had to, in Dundee, so you had to create your own jobs or create your own something to do, or be different and no be boring and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So like you just did it, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes you, I mean, we ran out of printers in Dundee that would print our tickets, because we'd owe every single printer in Dundee money for tickets. So we would be dodging, oh, we can't use that printer. What will we do for posters, John? Tape print? Well, we can't use tape print. We're still owe the money. So we're dodging about all over the place until we exhausted every avenue. But we still managed to pull it together, you know. It was just good fun. Mm. Everything was a hustle, like, you know. It was a great laugh. They never stopped laughing. I mean, that's all we did. Like even getting chased out of town from gigs for no paying bands or something like that. Well, we never paid a band who we never booked but turned up and demanded money. That was quite a story.
Oh, wow.
They just arrived at the venue, a band called The Exploited. I don't know if you've heard of them. And they're a punk band. You should Google them in. And they arrived at the venue and said, we're playing tonight with these four punks with these sort of Mohican haircuts that take your eye out. And I said, no, you're not. He says, yeah, we are. I said, well, no, you're not, because I'm the promoter. He says, listen, we're playing. We're getting 50 quid. That's it. End of story. I said, oh, okay, then. Fair enough. And they went on stage and there was a riot and we fled the venue in John's car. And I got back to Dundee, ran up the stairs of this multi-story dump that we stayed in with glue sniffers and graffiti and all that usual shit, got into the house, switched on the TV, settled down with some beans and toast and a cup of tea and watched Streets of San Francisco, Carol Walden, Bulbous Nose, Michael Douglas. I thought, oh, I can relax now. And the phone went. It's Wattie from The Exploited. We know where you live. I went, oh, fuck it. So I had to meet them the next day and give them the money. So that was that. So you get things like that, you know. Yeah. My mum used to go crazy, like, and my dad was, I mean, he would pick up the phone, people phoning me, you know, for tours we were doing buses to see the Pope and Barry Manilow and things like that. And he was going nuts, like, you know.
Was it a young man's game? Is it, because it looks like in the movie, the promoter for the publicist for Iron Maiden was young, and you sort of, you know, Connor Barry's character as a young you were having a discussion about what, well, did you read the contract? And it just seemed like it was it all kind of controlled by young upstarts, or what was the vibe?
Well, I got a contract that I never read. I never used to read it. Well, seriously, never used to read the contract. I mean, I never read that Iron Maiden. I just put it under the sofa, like in the movie. And the day of the gig, when I turned up and the manager actually said to me, where's the crew? And I thought he was talking about a fishing boat or something nautical or something like that. I said, how do you mean? He says, well, the crew, the load-in. I says, oh, right, you need a hand with that. Like, he said, yeah, it's in the contract, four crew. I went, all right. And I saw four guys across at Samuel's the jeweler, smoking joints like stoners, like, and I went, all right, aye, there they are, there. Oh, Jimmy, John, whatever. They come over. And then he says, where's the breakfasts? I went, oh, there's a great wee cafe around the corner there. He goes, have you read the contract? I went, yeah, of course I have. 30 breakfasts it was. I went, aye, I know that. Aye. I'll phone my mum. I said, mum, you need to come down and do breakfast for Iron Maiden. She went, Christ. Where will I get the money? I said, that big whiskey bottle you've got, you've been saving for a holiday, smash it open and just go to Asda or something. So she smashed open the whiskey bottle, got all the bacon, the rolls, but my dad come down, he was doing that. Then I said, mum, we need lunch and dinner. And she just went nuts, like, you know. So she made all the meals and that was it. And the gig happened. It was a complete fluke that it did happen, but it did. Actually, I met them last week in London, the management. We went to the Cadogan Arms. If you're ever in London, go to the Cadogan Arms on the King's Road. So I met them and we had a laugh about making the movie and the stuff we had to do and all that. It was great. You know?
Good. That's lads. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I also like the, you know, John having to try to mortgage his house or lose his Florida vacation fund.
Yeah.
But just all these things that you're able to do. And like you said, hopping from one ticket printers to the other to try to make things work. I'm like astounded just to be talking to you, because I feel like, you know, there's legends out there. But when I had the opportunity to speak with you, I said, you know what?
Thanks. I mean, John and Scott were great as well. John was the eternal optimist. I mean, when we were quoted £1,000 a mile to book Pink Floyd, Fleetwood Mac and the Stones, when I actually phoned up and said, I want to book Fleetwood Mac, Pink Floyd, the Stones or whatever, and the agent just obviously knew I was a rocket, like, you know, and said, that's going to cost you £1,000 a mile. I went, right, okay, hang on a second. And John got the A to Z book you used to get with the mileage. And in the meantime, he was saying, we can do that. I said, how can we do it? It's here. I said, what do you mean it's here? You're sitting on it. I went, what, the sofa? He goes, the house, he says, the house, right? I'll mortgage the house. I says, what can you get for that? He goes, 6 grand. I went, right, okay. So we do the mileage, and it works out to be £1 million. If it's just like the guys take the piss out of us, like, you know. So I said, John, it's going to be £1 million. That will get us from London to Swiss Cottage, you know, not Scotland, which is only about 5 miles, right? So that was that. And then the guy said, I could give you Iron Maiden, though. And we went, yeah, great. And I went to John, who's that? I went, fuck knows. So we booked them. And we booked Iron Maiden. Never even knew who they were. And it was only about a week later that the buzz started to really go and kind of come together. Mm-hmm. But it was all like fly by the seat of your pants stuff, you know. And it's always been like that. But even reliving it, retelling the story, I can always remember John sitting there going, it's in here. You're sitting on it. This is it. The house. Okay. 6 grand. 6 grand. That's going to get us fucking nowhere, man. You want £1 million for Pink Floyd or something. But imagine us like 22. And the agent said, I don't know if you're aware, but Pink Floyd's album been number one in the US for about 3 years or something. Aye, of course we do. Aye. And Fleetwood Mac Rumours is so, aye, we know that as well. And the Stones, you know. But having the audacity to actually phone up and try and book them is a laugh, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about the casting, because I think one of the best lines that I remember is what Sean Connor's character Scott says with the, he goes, there's three classy lassies on the queue, make my spring go bing.
That's true. Well, my mate Scott Young, who died, I don't know if you know that, if you Google in Scott Young, he died in mysterious circumstances where he fell from a fifth floor penthouse onto railings. He was basically murdered, but you know, you could sort of Google that story. But Scott always had these, she makes my spring go ping, like, and it's made even worse things than that, you know. I mean, there was worse, to be honest with you, not politically correct. But Scott used to come away with some crackers, like, you know. He used to call me Mr. Magoo. Mr. Magoo, how are you? And all that. He's a brilliant guy. Awesome.
Well, what was that process of trying to get this trio of actors to portray you and your young friends? How many people did you have to go through, and what was the criteria that felt them right for the parts?
Well, it was just like we did auditions in Dundee and London. They popped up. Grant, the guy that plays Scott's from Dundee. Connor is from Edinburgh. Sean is from Glasgow. And Sean's brilliant as well. I mean, they're all really, really good. And it just gelled. And then we needed a girl. We got Tara, who plays Shona. And I got her through, I was stuck in a traffic jam in Bangkok because I live in Thailand. And I was watching a thing called The Fall, which was set on an island about a serial killer. And the guy from 50 Shades of Grey was in it. Not that I've seen 50 Shades of Grey then, but that was the kind of thing that, you know, it was a big thing. So I see this blonde girl. I went, bloody hell, she's a spitting image of the girl at the college. So I waited till the end, saw her name, got her name, Googled it in, got her agent, phoned her agent, and that was it. Then I met her. So there you go. And I flew to London the next day, met her at St. Martin's Lane Hotel, had a peppermint tea and a biscuit. Not very rock and roll, but she loved it. She loved everything about it, and she's been great.
One of the things that was very kind of noticeable about the decor of the early and late 70s, like, everybody seemed to have a duster jacket.
What's a duster jacket?
It's kind of like the long leather coat that I saw you wearing in the film, and later Scott was wearing. So, you know, trying to bring authenticity to the film. Like, I guess I'm wondering, how much fun did you have diving back in to make this legitimate? Does it actually feel like, you know, like Connor's haircut, he looked like a Fisher-Price man. So was that emulating your hair from the early 70s?
When I used to have hair, yeah. It was like, it was kind of like that. But the costume thing was funny because the first week of the shoot, the girl that was doing the costumes was on holiday. And she was there. So we'd roll up to do the shoot, and they'd come in dressed about, kind of come dressed like that, come on. So we'd go to the local thrift shop or something, right? And the charity shop. And that leather coat, actually, you never saw it. There's two leather coats. What happened to the other one? Anyhow, there was one. We went to the shop in Broughty Ferry in Dundee, which was a cancer research or something, right? And they had this Gucci leather coat that initially cost £600 that we got for 30, which I still have. I purloined that from the wardrobe. But and then it was easy though to get the stuff because like Harrington jackets, Levi jeans, Converse shoes. It was just like basically dressed like the Ramones or something or whatever. It was easy, like, you know, to get it together. But I mean, it does look. I mean, it's won a few awards for their design, so I think we must have got a few things right, like, you know. So it's good.
The style of shooting, it actually felt kind of modern. I'm wondering if you were inspired by Guy Ritchie in a way, because I felt a very, very lock stock sensibility to.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, a lot of people, like when we played Edinburgh Festival and we won the best audience award thing for British movie or whatever it was, which was brilliant. And people, it was really funny because I've never done anything like this, right? So I would be reading these reviews at me and we compare it to like Guy Ritchie, Danny Boyle, and the guy that did, but he did That Sinking Feeling and Local Hero and stuff like that. It was brilliant. Anyway, Scottish guy. So I was reading these things. I was embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to read it thinking, what, is it April Fool's Day or something? Because they're comparing it to some really famous people, you know? So I thought, wow, this is great. But I wasn't really inspired by anything. I just did it the way we did it, you know?
Did you grow up being resourceful? It feels like this is just sort of in your DNA to just make the best of it. You know, there's an expression, I might be misquoting this, but Bob Marley says that you can't control the ocean. You just have to learn how to surf. And it's something that I've adopted because I just really like the way that, you know, it really embodies what being alive is, you know, just 1 minute to the next.
What I'm going to do. So what was that about Bob Marley? Love Bob Marley. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that he has said famously, you can't control the ocean. You just have to learn how to surf, which is just a way of being, you know, going with the waves, so to speak, and being resourceful. So what I was asking is, do you remember a time before you got into music that you were finding ways to sort of navigate life and be resourceful, to make the most of the moments?
Well, I once worked as a lifeguard in a hotel and I couldn't swim. That was being resourceful. To be honest with you.
I hope nobody's in trouble.
No, my brother got me the job because he was a chef there and his friend was in charge of the leisure facilities and he put me in charge of the swimming pool, which was okay because I said, look, John, not John Gibson, but John Monaghan was his name. I said, John, look, say anybody's in trouble. He said, look, all you do is give them a pole. You put the pole in and they grab the pole and they come out. Right, that's it. Don't worry about it. So one day we're up at this place called Loch Earn Head, which is a huge loch, about 20 miles long. You know, like a lake. We call them lochs in Scotland, right? And these English guys were trying to swim across the loch, but it was a summer's day, but the water was really cold. And you could hear everything because it was still. And you'd hear them going, oh, I can't make it. I can't make it, mate. I can't make it, mate. I'm going to drown or something like that. And you could hear this coming across. And then somebody in their wisdom said, oh, it's okay. There's a lifeguard from the hotel. He'll save them. And I went, Jesus Christ. There he is. Dave, save them, sort of style. You know what I mean? And I'm going, Jesus Christ, what are we going to do? And luckily, my mate John, who employed me as a lifeguard, was taking people water skiing up there, and he saw them, got his motorboat and went and picked them up. Tragedy, you know, averted, if that's the right word, at which point I moved on to greener pastures before I endangered anybody else. But that's great. Yeah, that was it.
Well, I've heard that there's a lot of water in Thailand, so over the years, when did you learn how to surf to swim? Are you okay with water now?
No, I can't swim. It's like one of the banes of my life. Three things in my life I'd love to do. I'd love to speak Spanish because it sounds really cool. Or Italian, but that's a bit difficult. Spanish is a bit easier. We watch a lot of Narcos during lockdown and Capo and El Popo, or whatever his name is, all that stuff. I'd love to play the piano, but obviously I can't do that either. And the other thing was swim. So it's three things that I could possibly schedule into my last quarter of life.
Well, I don't know how you have time for anything. So good luck getting those at the trifecta of skills under your belt. But, you know, you mentioned the languages that you find endearing. I've always thought that, in my opinion, Scottish accents are one of the more endearing dialects.
If you can understand them. Accents are funny. I was in Nice on my first ever trip to Nice. My first ever trip abroad was to Nice for a very strange reason that we won't go into. But anyway, I was at the airport in Nice. No, not the airport, the train station. Have you been to Nice? It's brilliant, right? It's lovely. So I'm at the train station and these two girls come up to me and went, "Excuse me, do you speak American?" I went, "No, speak English though." And
here we go.
It was just great.
Oh, wow.
It was brilliant. "Do you speak American?" "No, yeah. not clue, mate. But I do speak English." That's accents.
Yeah. Well, so talk to me about, you said the album's finally coming out.
Oh, the album, it's number one in 10 countries today.
Okay, great.
I can't tell you all the countries because it's all, you can't release it until Monday, the facts and figures, but I can tell you it's number one in Germany, which is the third biggest market in the world, and we play loads of arenas and festivals there. So, total result. I mean, the band have been going 27 years, and a new album, every single review has been awesome. The warm-up gigs that we're doing just last week, unbelievable. And it's like, you have to pinch yourself and think, that's like 27, 28 years. And it's not like the greatest hits or any of that bollocks. Like, you know, it's like a new album,
mm-hmm.
and all the big papers, all the big music magazines, all the channels, all the countries, all over the world, all the bloody digital sites and blah, blah, blah. It's just smashing it every place. So that was great. Saw them last night. They were brilliant. So that's good. That's like a bonus point, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, digital is definitely, the more portable music has gotten over the years, the more accessible it is. Kind of gives life to what you're saying. But, you know, it's amazing how while vinyl never really died, it's just had a huge resurgence in the last 8 to 10 years. So, what's your take on that? And is the album available on vinyl?
It's number one loads of places on vinyl because it's all like, you know, various colors and blah 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 and, you know, artwork and this, that, and the next thing. So it's done great on vinyl. I mean, it's sold out all the vinyl right really really quick. So we'll do more vinyl, I think, or maybe it's limited edition. I don't know, the record company do that. But it's all selling like the proverbial hot cake.
That's great. Well, it's funny. Go ahead.
No, but my take on vinyl is fantastic. I've got a quick story. My daughter, Billy, was about 13 at the time. And we went to my mate's record store to buy. She said, "Dad, it's your brother's, Miss Apple's birthday. Buy him a present." I said, "Yeah, of course I'll buy him a present, yeah." So, and we were in the record store and she goes, "Why don't you get my record player?" I went, yeah, okay, I'll get my record player. There was a little portable record player, £30, portable.
Amazing.
So I pick it up and she goes, "Dad, it's your brother's birthday. It's Uncle Arthur's birthday." I went, "Yeah, why not get that one there?" And my mate Gary, who's behind the counter, goes, "That's 580 quid. I went, And my daughter goes, "Get him, you'll make him happy." I went, "Fucking hell, right, okay, 580 quid. So I get the record player. I said, "Gary, can you deliver it and set it up?" He says, "Fine." And then she said, "Dad, but what's he going to play on it? He's not got any albums." I said, "Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, what do you think I should get?" "Well, he likes Nirvana because you used to promote them. And I know he likes David Bowie." I went, "Yeah." "And I know he likes a band called T-Rex from years." I went, "Like, anything else he likes?" "He likes Fleetwood Mac," so I ended up buying 10 albums, right? So it's 10 albums and a record player. I spent about a grand, right? And then Gary comes round with it, the guy for the record shop. And my brother apparently had been looking at that record player for about a year. And he was like in tears. He was so happy. And Billy goes, "Told you." Moral of the story is, vinyl's making a comeback, but record players, boom, you need a record player to play on.
Absolutely.
So they're coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a Sony 5520 from the 70s and a receiver that's just as old. And I just love it. I mean, yeah, as my friend Brian famously says, he goes, well, you know, the reason the vinyl's popular is because you can't roll a joint on an MP3 player.
That's good.
Anyway.
But I mean it's a great thing. I mean, I used to always buy cool albums when I was at college. I mean, see now, like if you like an album, download it, boom, it's on your phone. Nobody sees it. Nobody knows what you listen to, right? But see if you go into college with a Led Zeppelin album under your arm that you've just bought, you know, mm-hmm. or Roxy Music or something, who we used to manage, like, you look, or Bowie, you look cool. People say, look at that guy, he's cool. But see if you go in with something like by, I don't know, kind of thing of NB, say Boney M, nothing wrong with them, like, you know, but it's not going to really rock your boat, like, you know what I mean? So yeah. It's a bit of a statement to who you are. Look what I bought. Look at me, physical graffiti in the house. So that's that.
Well, you know, Dave, I would love to just, I mean, you mentioned Nirvana earlier, which I think feel like I could talk to you for another 6 hours. I want to be respectful of your time and the outlet that's following me, but I would love to have a follow-up if you ever get some time.
Well, anytime. I just love chatting. It's like, I will literally go to the opening of an envelope, okay, to push this movie, right? And I love chatting to good people. I mean, it's great. The bulk of the people I chat to are kind of like you. They're really engaging. You get a good blather, as we say in Scotland, a good chat. And it's good fun. So I'm up for it any time. So if you want to repeat a couple of weeks or whatever, or follow up, just give me a shout, okay?
Well, that sounds great. And to everybody from Go See Talk, David, thank you for your time. People, check out Schemers, The Life and Times of the One and Only David McLean. We'll catch you next time.
Top man, rock it. Have a good night.